once again to the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rework Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com. I'm your announcer, Papa Newt of PapaNewt.com in Columbus, Nebraska, and in just a moment, we'll be joined by our co-host, Catherine Ironwood of LuckyMojo.com in Forestville, California, and Conjure Man Ali of ConjureManAli.com in Mission Viejo, California. This week, we'll be joined by a special guest from the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, Apollo Dark of ApolloDark.com in Forestville, California, bringing us today's topic on fair audience. Afterwards, they will take your calls and offer advice to address, ameliorate, and remediate your questions and problems about love, money, career, and spiritual protection using traditional African-American folk magic practices of voodoo, conjure, or root work as divined and prescribed by the greatest spiritual voodooists of our time. You can learn a lot just by listening, but if you're selected from among those who signed up at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and called into the show, then you'll be on the air and receive a free consultation. We'll be going to the phones in just a moment, but first, let's catch up with our co-hosts, Miss Cat and Conjure Man Ali. Miss Cat.
Hi, Papa Newt. Nice to hear your voice. And catch up, I guess, is about the best we can call it. If y'all are used to the sound of my voice, you can see I'm not back to normal yet. So I'm off the bass register and I'm now singing baritone. And I hope all you all don't have to be subjected to me breaking down and coughing. But this little cold has one of those that decided to settle in my lungs and linger. And I've been pretty much flat on my back the last 10 days. And I have just finally got up and started making oils and started working out at the shop. And it's been nice, very nice. For all of those who are wondering where we are in history and you know, listening to this show in the archives, which I know that thousands of people do, this is the pre-2016 presidential election show.
Mm-hmm.
And all I'm going to say is it's as bad as it looks out there, folks. It's really strange. And I don't really have much more to add to that. But if you want to hear another take on it, go back and listen to Professor Porterfield on the Now You Know show. He unloaded quite a volley of comments. And I don't need to go down that path. But my, oh, my. They are out in force. And they have come to my Facebook timeline and asked me to expound on what I believe. And, of course, they don't like it when they hear it. Enough said. And when you're flat on your back and you can't get out of bed, well, there's nothing to do but go talk politics on Facebook, I swear. So,
entertaining.
So I have said a bit more than I probably should have said to the haters and all. The other things that's been going on, we've been working very hard at the shop catching up with this new database system. And I just want to say that the new database system has really rewarded us for all the effort we've put into it. And as I've always mentioned in the last month or so, 2 months while this has been going on, thank you very much, Heidi and Alicia and Eileen, for helping, Leslie Lowell for helping, and Nikki and Nicole and Margie in the office for learning how the new database system works. And thanks, of course, everybody on the floor, which is Margie, King, Jenna, Yosei, Heidi, and so forth. But I'm talking database right now, and we've really had a wonderful upgrade. And again, I got to thank darling Nagashiva, a troll towel head in the chat room some of the time, Lucky Mojo Curio Company in the chat room some of the time. That's my husband. And we have gotten it to the point where it used to be and better. And we have, with the help of a few overnight workers, Michael Bautista and Brian Hosley, making oils on the off hours, we're all caught up on our orders. So if you had thought about ordering from Lucky Mojo but heard we had a reputation for slowness, that, my friends, is a thing of the past. We are up to the minute, and it's just beautiful. And the other thing that's, I guess we could say, new and strange around here is that we have put out a newsletter that introduced a new product, and I do want to mention it on the radio because many of you will not have gotten the newsletter. If you haven't gotten our monthly newsletter, you can just go to any Lucky Mojo page and you'll see a picture that says, join our newsletter. Just do it. It's free. Comes in the mail, email, once a month. We introduced a new product, which is a floor wash special, but it's actually not a new product. We used to sell it up until around 2002, 2003. It was a regular thing. You could buy the floor wash special, and it consists of a bottle of Chinese wash, a mineral of your choice from a limited selection of choices, alum, saltpeter, salt, whatever it is you want, Epsom salts and so forth. And then the third is an oil, which would be from the protective and jinx-killing lines of oils. And you get a savings. If you order that, you save some money. It's a floor wash special. And I just decided to bring it back. I don't know. I missed it, I guess, and it was nice, and it had a nice paper ad. So if you're a Lucky Mojo customer and remember the floor wash special, well, it's back. So that's about it for what's new in our world. Lots of good work being done. The shop is hopping right now with customers, and a blast from the past. A gal I haven't seen in many, many, many a year showed up. She used to play the character Valkyrie at comic cons, and I used to edit the comic book Airboy, and she dressed as Valkyrie from Airboy. And time has moved on, and we've all changed, but it turns out she's a model train enthusiast, a G-scale train enthusiast, and not only that, she likes Bachmann 10-wheelers, just like I do. Now, isn't that a small world? But we both liked that character of Valkyrie, the sort of tough pilot. She was a pilot, and she had her own plane, and she was a real trippy character, and, well, there we were. We liked Valkyrie. So to see her show up, and then to find out she's marrying one of my other graduate students, that was a trip. They're going to get married. And it's like, wow, what a small world. Really small world. Yeah. And in the chat room, Troll asked, did she like trains before she learned them from you? Yes, she did. And I didn't know it, nor did she know that I liked trains.
Wow.
It was just one of those weird things. It was just how it was. So, well, I'm going to cough myself silly here if I don't stop talking. So, I'm going to turn this over to you, Ali. Tell us what's new in your world, and then we'll bring on our guest.
Well, thanks, Cal. Hopefully your voice gets some rest and you have a nice cup of warm tea next to you. I've been keeping busy and, like yourself, and keenly watching, observing, and even participating in the 2016 presidential election. This is an election that's going to go down in the history books. My colleagues in the history department joke that when it comes to writing history, there's going to be a history book about 2015, there's going to be a history book about 2014, and when it comes to 2016, we're all just going to collectively go, we don't talk about it because it's such a dark time for all of us. It's been fascinating. Things are getting quite ugly, I think. But I did want to mention something. I would be remiss if I did mention about the election, and that is that what it pertains to our community in particular. Hoodoo, as everyone is quite familiar with, is deeply involved in the African-American community. It's rooted in a tradition and culture that is predominantly Black American, but also in the Black church. And has been deeply involved in things like civil rights, voting rights, and reclaiming power for a community that is often disenfranchised. And this is the first year in a long time that communities like the Black community are going to be voting without the protection that they've had in previous years because of a recent Supreme Court ruling. And so there's been massive, massive voter suppression in places like North Carolina, where they have moved polling places from predominantly Black communities. They've cut down on Sunday early voting. that really hits an institution of black voting, which is marching to the polls, right? Souls to the polls, as they call it. Souls to the polls is really being undermined in this election. But you have some fantastic people like Reverend Barber out in North Carolina fighting hard, root workers that are out in North Carolina lighting candles, saying prayers for the community. So this election is more than just electing a president. It also has very deep impact for the communities that we work in. So I just wanted to mention that so that people are aware of what's going on and hopefully motivate some people to really reach out and start working for the community. Even if you're not interested at the presidential level, there are people that are being affected right now, our people that are being affected right now by suppression efforts. And we have on our hands really another civil rights movement underway and an attempt to suppress that.
Thank you, Ollie, for saying all of that. I mean, I kind of glossed over it, but I do have a couple of things to add to that.
Yeah.
The burning of the Hopewell Missionary Baptist Church in Greenville, Mississippi, they don't know yet who's done it. They don't know the reason. It was graffiti vandalized with the words, "Vote Trump." We don't know who did it or why, and I'm not going to speculate on that. But what was interesting to me was I just put up a simple appeal. There was a GoFundMe campaign to raise money to rebuild that church, and the haters that came out on my Facebook timeline and posted all over my wall was disgusting. Just disgusting.
Wow.
And they were like, you know, Trump supporters wouldn't do this. It's Hillary who did it. And I'm like, I just asked people to contribute to a GoFundMe campaign. And it was amazing, the amount of vituperation. People I had never heard of, people who were definitely not my friends. And I believe those people were Trump trolls or robo posters. I couldn't believe it. And I was going to not say anything about it. I was going to be real nice, but I just said it. The hell with those people. The hell with them. Okay?
Yeah.
Because they had no, they have no sympathy. They have no conscience. They have no ethical center. They're fucking racists, and they're out in force. Okay? So there you go. And Candelo in the chat room says, "I'm hexing all their asses." Thank you, Candelo Kimbisa. And we have a flyer that came out of a panel this last May on social justice spells. And we still have copies of that flyer left over. And if you want to order from Lucky Mojo, when you order, if you want the social justice spells flyer, it gives some really good spells. And it's free. It's absolutely free. And you can ask for it by name when you place any order for anything. And Madam Samantha says, "I think they are already cursed." Well, if my God has anything to say about it, they are definitely going into lakes of fire. Okay? For sure. Fire from the bosom of Abraham.
It takes a special type of ugly to come out when a church is burned and to sit there and spew the type of hate that they do. So I feel this election has really brought out not just the ugly side in our country, but really the bottom feeders, the bottom dwellers, the people that you would shun in normal society. And we've come out and shown how – and these aren't, you know, kids. These aren't teenagers. These are grown-ass people who know better or should know better, but now feel the privilege and the freedom to express a type of hatred that has for many years in our society been really pushed into a dark corner. And now they're out in the open and very comfortable on Twitter and Facebook and out in rallies. I mean, anti-Semitism is another thing that those of us that are watching this are very alarmed. People chanting things like Jew SA. I mean, this is horrific. 2016 is going to go down as the year where we really, really flirted and enabled a type of demagoguery that the U.S. hasn't seen before.
Right, right. And I just got a comment here, too. Shalom Ministries International is in our chat room and says, North Carolina is in the midst of it right now. There has been a second burning, a church, and a house shooting a few hours ago. And I'm just telling you guys, this is bad out there. Well, all right, so I wasn't going to say anything, but I did. Now people are going to listen to this show 5 years from going, "What was she talking about? I don't get that." Look it up in the history books, kids. Okay? Look it up in the history books if you listen to this later. All right. Let's bring in our wonderful guest, Apollo Dark. And before I do, I'm going to tell you, Apollo Dark has Black Lives Mattered tattooed on his arm. And I've seen the tattoo. That's commitment, buddy.
That is
commitment. Yeah. Welcome, Apollo Dark.
Hi.
Well, so Apollo Dark, for those of you who don't know him, is a member of AIR, and he has been a reader and a root worker for a long time. He comes to us with a lot of interesting background and was raised in the neo-pagan community, has traveled up and down the country, learned from many different styles of spiritual and religious practice, as well as magical practice. Primarily a wonderful reader and magician at this time. So, Apollo Dark, you're bringing us our topic, which is clairaudience. Now, let me just say a couple of words about clairaudience, and then I want to turn it over to you. Clairaudience is one of the Clair family, and everyone knows clairaudience's sister, clairvoyant. But clairaudience, or to be clairaudient, as it were, means to be able to hear things clearly from a distance, just like clairvoyant is to see from a distance. And there's clairsentient, their older brother.
Mm-hmm.
He's the person who knows things from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
And the Clair family has a lot of different fantastic spiritual gifts and disciplines that people can train themselves with. And so tonight, our subject is clairaudience, hearing voices. All right, Apollo, what do you have to bring to the topic?
Well, first of all, there's the first thing I learned about clairaudience, because I never read any books about it. No one really talked about it. No one really wants to learn about it and all this kind of stuff, because the idea of hearing voices is so stigmatized in our culture. You know, if you hear voices, you're crazy and you belong on medication and the loony bin and all of that. And so no one really wants to approach the subject. And, you know, I'm diagnosed bipolar. I have had psychotic breaks and vivid hallucinations and stuff that has happened to me in the past. I've been in the hospital a few times. And so after that, after being properly medicated and deemed, you know, legally sane and all that kind of stuff, I still would hear voices. It took, I would say 3 or 4 years of hearing this stuff to try and cipher it down into what was real and what was not, and talking to doctors about it and all of that. And so the main thing with voices is that it's categorized into a few different things as far as in the psychology field and mental health field, is that there's a few different types. There's the voices that are paranoid delusion, which is that there are voices that tell you that people are listening to you, or that you should be careful about this, or that that there's something after you and all of that. But that's one type of delusion. There's also the punishing voices, the voices that tell you that you're a bad person and that you deserve to be punished, and that there's all this bad things that are going to happen if you don't do this and all that. There's voices that a real common one that probably is seen in like shows like Criminal Minds and all this kind of stuff, or like the voices that say kill yourself or kill someone else, you know, those kind of things. And all that stuff really happened, but I never experienced anything like that. And when I talked to my doctors about it, they said they don't really know how to really deal with it, because it's not something bad. You know, if it doesn't fit into any of those things, they don't want to try and over-medicate it and get rid of it if I know how to just handle it on my own. And so after years of practice trying to figure out what these voices were, and after taking more training into divination, I kind of figured it out on my own what was going on. And so now it's reached the point where I can ask a question about most things and hear some sort of answer from whoever it is that's speaking to me. And the way I use it in my professional practice, you know, 80% of my business is girls, women come to me wondering about their boyfriend, their ex, their husband, ex-husband, or anything like that. They tell me about this person. I feel a connection to that person, and then I proceed to ask that connection questions to find answers to, like, what are they thinking? What are they feeling about this and all that? And I hear the answers for that. And I recently had a discussion with a friend of mine about, you know, he was saying, well, maybe he's clairaudient because when he hears things, he sometimes feels messages about it. And I said, well, that's not really how it works. It's not necessarily that when you hear something, you feel a message from it. That's not clairaudience. Clairaudience is when you're hearing nothing at all, when it's dead silent and you're not thinking about anything and you're not hearing yourself think, or you're thinking something completely and you hear something speak into your ear or to your mind, something completely different that you're not even thinking about. So that's the difference. It's not necessarily like you listen to a song and you get a message. It's more of, you know, it's a dead, quiet room and you hear someone talking inside of it.
May I interrupt you with a question? Because you're very, very frank, and I admire that greatly, about having been diagnosed with mental illness and yet not wanting to lose the aspect of clairaudience, which is a gift and deals with mediumship. And I have experienced this with other friends, too. There is this idea of if you hear voices, they're always going to be negative and you're going to be a schizophrenic or have schizoaffective disorder or something terrible, a diagnosis that can be life-crippling. And yet, there are people who earn their living and have for many, many years as spiritual mediums who simply ask a question and the voices answer them. And how do you tell the difference? And one of the things you said makes so much sense, that the voices of negative ideation that are intrusive, the voices that say kill yourself or nobody likes you, they're all about your business. But if you go into a state of mediumship, a light trance, or just simply access the spirit world, and you say, what would be the herb I should prescribe for this woman, for instance? I have done this, and I have heard a voice telling me the answer. Oh, basil. And it's not my voice from memory, nor is it the memory of anybody living that I've ever had a conversation. It's just this voice that tells me. And in the practice of spiritualism, we sometimes call these guide voices, or in some cases, master teacher voices. And we really do seek out that kind of information. So there is a difference, and it's a hard one to explain to psychiatrists unless they themselves have experienced mediumship.
Yeah. And when I tried to explain my doctors before, they just did the same thing. Are they negative voices? Do they tell you to hurt anyone or anyone else? Do they tell you that? Do they make you feel annoyed? Are you uncomfortable with these voices? How does it make you? And since I'm really okay with it and can deal with it, and they don't say anything bad and nothing like that, and it's nothing, you know, harmful in any way, they're like, well, not too worried about it then.
That's you've got a good psych doc, because I know people, that who've been told, oh, well, you know, you're crazy, you're hearing voices. But what they're hearing is, for instance, I practice psychometry, and it often comes to me in the form of clairaudience, too. I can be given, a thing, an object, a vase, a little plate, and I can all of a sudden, I hear people talking about it. You know what I'm saying?
No,
they're telling. Yeah, it's very common with me. And I learned that I was a natural gifted psychometrist. But it's sometimes people see it as it's a sense impression. No, usually for me it is a voice. It's almost like I'm dialing in a radio and I'm hearing them talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And for me, the best way I've described to people is like, so what do the voices say? And so most of the time it's a peanut gallery. Most of the time, it's like just having, it's seeming like you have an audience of people that are commenting on things that you're doing. I've recognized one of the voices, and it's one of the voices I talk to most often and hear the loudest, which is my late godmother, Morning Glory, who I can recognize it's her just from the way that she talks. Very flowery and flowery, but also very blunt. I talk to her pretty often about stuff and use her in my readings and stuff like that. But
you've hit on something else there too, which is that in the African American community, there is not that great shaming of the hearing of voices of your grandmother or your grandfather. In
mm-hmm.
fact, I've had people phone me up. They were distressed. Well, grandfather died 6 months ago and everybody else has heard him or seen him or dreamed of him, but I haven't.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong? Doesn't he like me? And this is part of African American access to African forms of ancestor contact and veneration.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the greatest hoodooists of all time was the spirit medium Pascal Beverly Randolph, who,
mm-hmm.
as we would say now, channeled and changed his own voice. He almost did impressions of the voices he spoke with. And he was an African-American spiritualist medium of the 19th century. This type of work is very common in hoodoo and is
mm-hmm.
not deprecated. Now, I'm going to ask Ollie a question, because, again,
mm-hmm.
Ollie comes to us with a double background. In other words, he comes to us with a Middle Eastern background that he was born into, but he's also been involved in African-American culture for many, many years. So, Ollie,
mm-hmm.
what do you know about clairaudience?
Yeah, clairaudience is massive. I've never heard it called clairaudience until I read books. Books called it clairaudience, and,
mm-hmm.
and authors did. But most people that I knew who weren't even participants in actively practicing hoodoo, by which I mean they weren't people who regularly set candles or did work for clients or even did work for themselves, they would experience certain aspects of clairaudience, in particular in forms of someone who was passed. Oh, guess what? I saw our uncle last night, right? And I heard
mm-hmm.
him and he came and he told me this story. Or one of the more common ones is just hearing your name spoken, right? And there used to even be rules, for example, I mentioned North Carolina earlier, but North Carolina and Virginia in particular had a rule that if you heard your name called after an aunt of a family member passed away, you were not to respond to it for the first 2 weeks, right?
Hmm.
Because they're too close to death, right? So they were trying to call you out. But then after
mm-hmm.
those 2 weeks, you were supposed to respond. That's when it's like, all right, things are good. Now, this comes out of the fact that both North Carolina and Virginia have a slightly more cautious approach to the dead. They both
mm-hmm.
have practices of ghost laying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Passing
mm-hmm.
babies over a grave that if a mother's passed away so that she doesn't fuss with the baby. So it's a little bit more cautious in that sense. But throughout the kind of broader tradition of hoodoo, there's always this idea that, yes, the spirits can communicate with you, and you're not crazy or have a mental issue, you know, because you're communicating with the spirits, but rather it's a gift that keeps that link alive. However, it does really necessitate the need to test spirits. Nagashiva typed this in the chat room. He's reading my mind. But this is something that I was always told, right, that no matter who speaks to you or who visits you, if you're clairvoyant, right, if you hear something, you're meant to test that spirit to make sure that not
mm-hmm.
all voices are equal, not all counsel is equal. And this really goes back to even if it's not negative or harmful, if it is just chatter, we were taught as I was growing up to test those spirits, right, to question
mm-hmm.
them and to make sure that the advice you're getting or the sounds that you are hearing are important for you and building that communication. So this kind of, I found this, and this wasn't unique to Virginia and North Carolina hoodoo. This was common everywhere I went. While Virginia and North Carolina was a little bit more cautious, I would say, for example,
mm-hmm.
the kind of rule, don't respond for a couple weeks, everywhere I went, always said, well, if you're hearing, make sure you test, make sure you ask questions. Right? So testing spirits was very important, and it was directly tied to our capacity to hear them and communicate with them.
I agree 100%, and I was taught this not only in a root work or African American context, but also by white mountain folks in the Ozarks.
Mm.
They would say the same thing, test the spirits, and they were mostly Scots-Irish. And I asked, because I recognized that is a phrase from the Bible, too. And I said, how do you test them? And one old man, he was a great healer and a wonderful old guy. He said to me, well, you just ask them, do you come from Jesus Christ or do you come from the devil? He was right up front. I'm like, wow, right? And his wife then chirped in and she says, well, in my family we do it a little different. I said, well, what do you say? She goes, well, we just say, can you say the name of Jesus Christ? And if the spirit cannot say the name of Jesus Christ, they have no business in your living room. That's what she said. So, but those were Scots Irish folks, but you know everybody's idea of testing the spirits is different. But now see what Apollo said was, if it's a quiet room and you hear these voices, and especially if they're a voice of someone you know, he mentioned his godmother, Morning Glory, a woman I knew and cared a great deal for, whose passing was too early. But who still watches over those who cared for her and loved her. She's a wonderful spirit. I've had contact with her spirit also after her death, certainly not to that level. But she's a present spirit, much like our old friend Dr. E is a present spirit. And John Ravenmoon, some of these people that we've known, another woman, a woman named Carol Kalish, none of y'all will know who I'm talking about unless you're in comics. Carol Kalish is still around. You know what I'm saying? That some people... they make it their business to stay in contact. And these are spirits of the beloved dead. There are also spirits who never were human beings.
Yes.
You could call them angels, archangels, guardian spirits, guiding spirits. And again, those spirits that are not known to you, in other words, somebody comes up and says, hey, you know, I think you should do this and that and the other, you might want to say, who are you? Where'd you come from? And they'll tell you. If they're a good spirit, they'll tell you.
Yeah, for me, I'd say the biggest helper that I have with my clairaudience, it's probably the big helper in my readings and stuff, is actually an elemental, which is, I learned how to make an elemental from actually being over at Morning Glory and Oberon's house and going through their library, and I found a binder that turned out to be a man named Gwydion's Book of Shadows.
Oh my gosh, I know Gwydion.
Yeah, and I was flipping through there and landed on a page where he describes creating an elemental, a spirit helper that is a spirit being to help you in your life and all of that. And so I did this little recipe that he had, and I created a spirit that I made it. When I created it, I just told him that I would like for you to just help me gather knowledge and use my best wisdom and to give me the messages I need to hear. And then you have freedom to do whatever else you see fit. And so he is sort of more the go-between between, you know, me asking questions and hearing the answer. I know what his voice is. And so that's usually when I do my readings and all this kind of stuff, it's either messages from Morning Glory or messages from this spirit. And from what I've learned from doing my readings this way for a few years now is that what I pick up on are people's subconscious thoughts. So it's not that I can read minds, like they think of a number, I know what number they're thinking of, but more like, you know, they tell me that their boyfriend said this and that, and then I ask a question and then figure out what was the meaning behind those actions and all that kind of stuff based on what I hear from the answer. Unfortunately, to my dismay, is that most of the time the answer is very common, a very common answer that's usually the case, and I want to say 70 or 80% of the cases that happen is that it's always man afraid of commitment with unable to process emotional baggage, and it runs away from emotional conflict and just doesn't have the ability to confront things that make him feel emotionally uncomfortable. And that's usually the answer like 70 or 80% of the time. And so now it's just like, you know, it almost feels like a cold reading because it's just the same answer every time.
Well, you know, one of the things you were talking about, the idea of an elemental spirit or a spirit, and for those who don't understand that what that means, this refers to the old Greek system of four elements or the Asian system of five elements, earth, air, fire, and water, or earth, air, fire, and water, and wind. That is a very interesting way of working. In traditional spiritualism, there also are traditions having to do with Native American spirits.
Yeah.
And I think that one reason these were so often called upon was the genocide of Native Americans had left a tremendous gap in the world of nature and the world of spirit, and people began to contact or be contacted by these Native American spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't hear about it so much anymore, but this was a very important facet of clairaudience. I don't believe that there was many spiritualists who didn't have some connection to a Native American spirit guide. In some cases, there were also people who had spirit guides from the deep past. For instance, Pascal Beverly Randolph, who I mentioned before, African-American man whose mother had been born in slavery and had been freed, and he was a free person of color. He was in communication with Plato. Plato, the actual Plato, that was his spirit guide. So, you know, there's a broad range here of who we speak to and talk to. I know people who also are contacted by and hear the voices of spirit animals. Spirit cats might meow in your house. I've heard them. And Nagashiva mentioned Apollonius of Tyana. Yes, another important spirit guide, the spirit guide of Louis de Clermont.
There was a period of time, I wanted to ask you this, Kat, you probably remember, there was a time where Apollonius of Tyana was really popular. There was like a craze where everyone was talking about Apollonius. And I don't know if it was because there was a reason for it, like they had just discovered something new about him or what it was. But when you mentioned that, I kind of smiled because I remember there was a period of time where, like, he was the guy, right? Like everyone.
Oh, he was the guy. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He, in fact, I believe L.W. DeLawrence also sought communion with him. And I know that Louis de Clermont, the anonymous, pseudonymous Louis de Clermont, has a picture of himself with contact with the Apollonius of Tyana. Yeah, this is, to me, very interesting. And I read a wonderful book by an English spiritualist woman who ended up living in Australia. And she said something which was interesting. In her world of spiritualism, everyone not only had what she referred to as a child guide, they also had a master doctor guide. So the master doctor guides were deceased doctors, some famous, some never heard of, who could prescribe and tell and diagnose illnesses in a medical context for a spirit medium. And the child guide was always a happy young child who often was accompanied by the mental smell of flowers and was happy, just a happy child guide, and would comfort those who came and cried and wept. And the happy child guide would have happy things to say. And she described this at great length, how in her spiritualist church, all the good mediums had a happy child and they had a doctor.
No, that's interesting because in a lot of systems, a lot of magical systems that involve spirit, there's always this idea of a spirit guide. And more often than not, we talk about a spirit guide. But if you actually look back at kind of the older sources, there was always two. So the idea of a doctor spirit and a baby spirit falls in line with that a lot. Generally, one is a counselor, one is a worker, one is helps with kind of the big, broader picture, and one focuses on much more individual. I know, for example, in my life, I have an ancestor. I have my personal djinn, obviously, that I work with quite frequently, but I also have an ancestor who acts as an intermediate as well. And this is not a mere ancestor. This is an ancestor that's been around for centuries, ages, and he's always been involved in my family line. And whoever gets the carnelian ring as it's passed down ends up with that ancestor who then continues to watch over the family ensure that the spiritual practices of the family are continued, that the ancestors remain vocal and involved in the direction of the family culture. So, you know, having a kind of old, deep-rooted spirit is very, very useful. And something that I have experienced quite a bit. I do want to mention one other thing that, to go really back to clairaudience, is that clairaudience, I have found, is usually not alone. If you have clairaudience, it can be that you have clairaudience and that's it. But I've often found that gifts appear in clusters. If you have clairaudience, you likely also have clairvoyance. One may develop sooner, one may be easier to develop than the other, but they generally go hand in hand. For example, a lot of people I know that are clairaudient also dream true, right? So there's often multiple kind of gifts that are there that are tied to one another. And so once you discover that you have one, exploring others is a good idea because it opens up doors and they tend to be related to one another. If you start to hear voices, you may also start to have visions, or you may start to be clairsentient, or you may have smells, right, phantom smells that are associated with it. So that's something to bear in mind, that these gifts do appear in clusters more often than not.
That's true. And one of the things that I've noticed that people often will hear, and I'm going to ask Apollo about this, because I've had this phenomenon. When you hear voices, is there one ear that is more predominant for spirit voices than the other? Because I have that. They do not just appear from everywhere. I almost have like my clairaudient ear, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that's true. I definitely hear, if I'm actually hearing the voice, like in a full audio context, it's my left ear. More often, it's more of a subtle kind of, I want to say, not necessarily hearing it through my ear, but like picking it up just through my mind and hearing it that way. So it's hard to describe exactly that feeling of hearing thoughts that aren't your own just appear in your mind. But if it is an audio, usually if it's full audio, it comes in through my left ear, and that only happens when it's something like, I want to say something like really powerful, really direct in a way. A spirit that wants to be heard very loudly, or cases of people saying something about me, and that I pick that up sometimes too. Just random conversations where I come up and then I pick up on it.
Wow. Well, this is a topic that interests me, because what you said now is the opposite of what I experience. And I've also heard others that say that they do have a clairaudient ear, but it's not universal. Now, for me, it's the right ear. When I hear, it's like almost over my right shoulder. I know people who have dogma about this. There is a group, and I'm afraid I'm not going to remember their name, but Nagashiva knows who I'm talking about. They are a South Asian, an Indian group, who have a guru who I'm not going to remember his name. But they have a whole thing where if you hear voices in your one ear, it's good voices, and if you hear it in the other, they're bad voices. And this is like socioculturally predetermined by them. But I've never heard of that in among non-Asian, non-Indian people, that their voices that you hear in one ear are bad and voices that you hear in the other ear are good. But it's almost like that old Disney movie with Donald Duck with the little devil Donald and the little angel Donald on his shoulder. It's kind of funny that way. But again, that is a unique cultural aspect to it, which I would not consider to be universal.
I think there are also, we should mention, and I want to ask both of you, if you're willing to talk about it, the ways you can actually develop these abilities, right? So people might be curious, what can you do to increase these abilities? And obviously without stepping on the free spell or anything like that. But I think a great way is, I have always recommended, and this isn't unique to clairaudients, but all attempts at developing your abilities, your psychic abilities, your visionary abilities, your oracular abilities, is keeping a dream diary. It starts to tune you into the kind of subjective, symbolic logic that can sometimes be associated with psychism. So keeping a dream diary is very useful. Meditation is very important, being able to sit in silence so that you can actually hear. If you're constantly in movement and chatter, that will take away from your capacity to hear. And of course, product-wise, I think Psychic Vision is a fantastic product for developing clairaudience.
Yeah, I agree about a dream diary being useful. I'm not a big one for meditation myself. I'm just never have been. That's not my thing. But I do like the idea of when you hear messages, write them down and keep a journal of all spiritual experiences. Some people call this a magical diary. Some people refer to it as a book of shadows. Some call a book of shadows meaning only those things that are recipes, spells, or formulas or rituals. But other people would call it a book of shadows. Any kind of a ledger book, and I prefer that it not be loose leaf. Write it down in a bound book. You're going to keep it. And mention what happens to you. Now, I'm going to jump back to something else Ali said, which was when people call your name. There is a tradition of this that goes way beyond what can be induced. The number of stories of people, and I'm sure you've all heard of this, people who were just about to be in a dangerous moment, could have been killed, and someone shouted their name, and they jumped to the side, or they heard it. It is a phenomenon so common that you would think that scientists would be researching it, but they're not. They go, well, it's only anecdotal. You had that happen to you, whatever. But I've had it happen to me. I'm not proud of it, but I'm a kind of habitual jaywalker. I just believe that I can cross streets wherever I want to because whatever. And I have been proven wrong a few times. I had an experience once where I was just, you know, going to run across a city street in the middle of a block because I'm me. And there was this just I heard my mother's voice. Now, my mother was alive at the time. My mother lived within 200 miles of where I was. And she didn't call out my name the way she would have now. It was like with her more, like I was more of a child. And I just heard her scream my name. And I jumped back. And this car comes out of nowhere and whizzes right in front of me, 2 inches from me. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. So was she being psychic? Was I being clairaudient? What was that about? Well, of course, after it happened, I phoned her and I said, did you have a moment there where you thought I was in danger? She goes, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, well, I heard your voice. You called my name and I jumped back and this car came around the corner, you know, just made a turn and just turned right in front of me. And she goes, huh? She goes, that happened to me once. I said, oh, yeah? She had had her mother screaming out her name. And not only that, in German, saying, watch out. And she almost got hit by a bus. And I thought, well, that's really odd, isn't it? So her mother at the time was, you know, hundreds of miles away and alive. So she had called her mother and said, well, did you have a sense that I was in danger? Her mother goes, no, I was out shopping. So that's interesting because that almost speaks to the bilocation of the mother. And it certainly speaks to the clairaudience of the daughter in those occurrences.
Yeah, that is a particularly interesting point. And it's something that is cross-cultural. It's not unique in that sense to hoodoo. I think almost every culture in the world has this idea of being able to hear someone call out your name. It's almost kind of the baseline psychic experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone can see ghosts. Not everyone can hear spirits. Not everyone can see the future, right? Not everyone has vision. But almost everyone has heard someone call their voice out at some point in their life. Phantom, whether that person was alive, whether that person was not. When the person is alive and you hear their voice, there's a variety of like interesting traditions that revolve in that. One is them psychically reaching out to you because they're either thinking of you or they worry that you're in danger or something like that. In the Middle East, there's a whole tradition called Nam Girak, the name catcher, and it's a specific spirit that pretends to be other people and calls your name out just for the hell of it, and it's a kind of
wow
spirit. Yeah, and it's not a troublesome spirit, but it just pretends to be other people. It's like a spirit ventriloquist that calls out your name. It's called Nam Girak.
Say again what it's called, the ventriloquist spirit of the Arabs?
Nam Girak, name catcher.
Wow.
Yeah,
I love that when you teach me things.
It's fascinating spirit. But then there's also, if the person is not alive, then that is their spirit watching out to you. And I was told that if you heard someone call out to you and they're not alive, that they've passed on, that was also not just a one-time off, but that was them saying, build a relationship with me, and that you should then try to communicate with that spirit from then on. Some people will ignore it, but they say, no, that's your chance. They're opening the door, saying, come and talk to me. I may be gone physically, but I'm still here spiritually. So when you hear someone call your name, don't ignore it. There's a
mm-hmm.
reason you hear it.
Wow. That's wonderful. I love the idea of a ventriloquist Arabic spirit. You've made my day. That's great. Oh, man. You know, the world is so full of cool stuff, you know?
It is an interesting world, and we have some fascinating lore about things like that. It's great.
Yeah. Eye of Newt, which is Papa Newt's account, said in the chat room, I keep thinking of Communing with the Spirits by Martin Coleman, as he in the beginning talks about testing the spirit and testing them again. If you all do not have Communing with the Spirits by Martin Coleman, it is a great book, and it really has taught many people a lot. And Martin Coleman is to be saluted and congratulated for producing that book. We carry it at our shop. You can also buy it at Amazon and Ex Libris and other places.
Mm-hmm.
Very important book on necromancy, on spiritual
mm-hmm.
communication. Unusual book. Ali wrote it in the chat. It's a bit dogmatic at times, but a great book. Well, yes, it is dogmatic, and that is one of the interesting things about, because of this fraught line between
yes.
communing with spirits and being mentally ill, dogma does enter in as people want to draw dividing lines
mm-hmm.
in the sand. Pascal Beverly Randolph was dogmatic also. He had spent years as a spiritual trance medium and then felt his life was being taken over by these voices, and he felt that he was being lost and he was almost being subsumed. And he then stopped doing spiritual mediumship of any type for a number of years and more or less just practiced what we would call hoodoo. And then he went back to it, and he came up with, for the last 25 years of his life or so, what he called the blending, in which he was able to be in a lighter trance and be aware of what was going on, then rather than being in what some people call a blackout trance. Those
mm-hmm.
who are in a blackout trance will sometimes dictate, and they need someone to write down, and they'll have no memory of what they said, heard, did. And what Randolph realized was that the blending, where he was still conscious of who he was, but was able to speak aloud what the voice told him, was a lot more safe for him. And
mm-hmm.
so his dogma was also very strong. So, yeah, there are many ways to approach this thing. And there is our bumper music, so we're going to have to move along. But thanks for this conversation, and we will now go to taking some clients.
The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rework Hour with your hosts, Catherine Ironwood and Contraman Ali, and this week's special guest, Apollo Dart, will be right back. We will be taking callers from our listeners and answering their questions through spiritual divination and prescribing down-home conjure remedies and remediation. And before we get to that, we have a few words from one of our sponsors, your friend and mine, former host of Monster Chiller Horror Theater on KTVT in Dallas, Texas, Count Goulash.
Oh, it is I, boys and girls, back from Halloween. Did you have a good Halloween? Excellent. And you know, I am here to talk to you about the Lucky Mojo Curio Company of 6632 Covey Road, Forestville, California. Oh, yes, friends. Did you know that Lucky Mojo is both an online magical shop and a real magical store that you can visit? They carry a full line of handmade spiritual supplies, including occult oils, incense, powders, candles, herbs, mojo bags, spiritual soaps, books, and spell kits for those who cast magic spells, love spells, money spells, and protection spells in the African-American hoodoo, pagan magic, and other witchcraft traditions. Oh, why, it's the Lucky Mojo Curio Company of 6632 Covey Road, Forestville, California. You can visit them in person. That's correct. Go and take your children with you, because the children will love to see the fantastic and the wonderful train set. Amazing. This train set has been featured in magazines. And you will be able to stand there and watch the beautiful, intricate, and whimsical trains as they go around and around and around and around and around and around, leading you deeper and deeper and deeper into hip sleep, into hypnotic sleep, until all you can hear is the sound of my voice speaking directly to you about the Lucky Mojo Curio Company on 6632 Covey Road, Forestville, California. And after you've seen the trains, why not go and take a few moments of quiet prayer and meditation inside the world's smallest church? That's the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church, right there on the grounds of the Lucky Mojo Curio Company. And then afterwards, go inside and browse through the aisles at thousands and thousands of items from all over the world at the touch of your fingertips. Oh, yes, my friends. But if you cannot get there in person, do not be afraid, because you can visit the Lucky Mojo Curio Company online at www.luckymojo.com. That's right, www.luckymojo.com, and spend hours in the privacy of your own home, going through page after page after page, looking at fantastic items that you can read about and order and have sent to your very door from, why, the Lucky Mojo Curio Company of 6632 Covey Road, Forestville, California, and online at www.luckymojo.com. Tell them Count Goulash sent you.
Round and round and round. Thank you, Count Goulash. You can hear the Count and others every week on the Now You Know show with Professor Porterfield, Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and here on the LMC Radio Network. Now it's time to go to the phones and take our next caller. Our next caller is all the way calling from us from the UK. International area code of 44. This is Sterling Winter. Sterling Winter, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hello, welcome to the show. Yes, I can. Welcome, hon. And I do see you are a first-time caller. Welcome to the show, hon. And you haven't gone to Ms. Kat or Conchman Ali on this particular situation, or have not gone to any other readers and root workers on this situation. Is that correct?
I'm quite new to this. So this is like my first ever reading.
Oh my.
My mum's cousin practices hoodoo, so I just started getting into it over the summer, so...
All right. Well, let me go ahead and read your description, and we'll see what we can do here for you. And she writes, I'm in love with a man who is already in a relationship. I want to know if he returns my feelings and if it's possible, suitable, to do breakup / separation work on them. Turning back to you, Ms. Kat.
All right. Well, thank you so much for trusting us with your very first reading. That's absolutely wonderful. Now, I'm going to ask a few questions of you before we start. And the first question I have is, what sign of the zodiac are you?
Taurus.
Ha, 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 ha. Well, you've welcomed yourself into a den of Tauruses. What you don't know is Countryman Ali is a Taurus. I'm a Taurus. Papa Newt is a Taurus. But our guest today, Apollo Dark, you're not a Taurus, are you?
I'm an Aries.
An Aries. Well, you're the next best thing to a Taurus. That's a joke. Aries is the sign next to Taurus. So... you're a Taurus. Now, the gentleman, what sign of the zodiac is the gentleman?
Oh, my goodness. I should know. Born in September the 3rd. What? Sorry.
September the 3rd would be a Virgo.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm going to really try to test you here. The other person that he's with is a lady he's with.
I'm afraid I don't know her birthday.
You don't know. Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you just briefly one thing off the top of my head. You're a Taurus, and they are loyal. They are steady. They are people who don't like to change. They like things to stay the same. When they settle down into a relationship, they're there for the long haul. Virgo is another earth sign. They get along very well with Taurus, but they are a bit more changeable. They tend to settle down in the end, but they do have a bit of a little bit more wandering to them. They're ruled by the planet Mercury, and they are just a little bit more inclined to be bigamous, for instance, adulterous, the kinds of things that mutable signs are. So this is probably going to be a situation where it will take some work to get this guy to straighten up. So what I'm going to do now is I have a deck of tarot cards, and since you've never had a reading, I'm going to take a moment just to tell you that tarot cards are a set of playing cards from an old Italian game, and they have the same suits in them that you'd see in a poker deck, plus they have a fifth suit called trumps. So some of them will have numbers, just as, for instance, I'll give you a number, the 10 of coins. Coins would be the same as diamonds, so 10 of diamonds. And some of them have names like Hierophant or Chariot, and those are the trump cards. They represent allegorical figures. Okay, so now you know what I'm going to read. And as I said, thank you very much for trusting us with your first reading ever. Okay, card number one, and I'm going to read three cards. Card number one is called Strength. Well, this shows a woman taming a lion. It's one of the trump cards. And the woman who is taming the lion does so with love and a bit of sexuality. Now, that's good for you as a Taurus, because Tauruses are very sexual people. So anything you do to satisfy this person sexually... Well, that doesn't answer your question. Your question was, does he return my feelings? That's a harder question, because what he certainly is impressed by is your sexuality, your graceful ways, your love of beauty. Maybe you cook, maybe you dress beautiful, but you hear what I'm saying? He's attracted.
Yeah.
Okay? But that's not about his emotions. Now, the lion on this card is shown with his tail between its legs and being a little bit on the trepidatious side. The lion has a little bit of fear, but it's making up to the woman and it's licking her hand. It wants to be loved, and she's scratching it on the head and it's licking her arm. And she has it, the lion, held with a leash of rose flowers, little twined up rose flowers in a leash. She has an infinity symbol over her head. You have a lot of power over this guy. And does he return your feelings? Well, these two are not exactly on equal footing. In a way, she controls the relationship. He responds. Okay, now we're going to do card number two. Card number two is a bit of a troubled card. And this means that there is some trouble going on in this situation that involves the other lady. And the card, it does say you might be able to do some work to do a breakup here. It's possible, but it's not going to be easy work, and I'll tell you why. The card is a card that's usually considered a good money card. It's the Seven of Pentacles. It shows a farmer with a hoe. He's been out chopping weeds, and he has two plants, a big one and a little one. And on one of the plants, there are six coins instead of fruit. And on one plant, a little tiny plant, there's only one coin. So usually we would look at this as a card of splitting your money interests. But actually, this is a guy who's splitting his interests generally. So what he has done and what he wants to do is to keep both of you. And I'm afraid if he is actually with this other person, if she's the bigger plant, in other words, if he has children with her, if he owns land or a home or rents an apartment with her, has a car in common title with her, has been with her a while, he's going to stay with that. The little plant, he doesn't chop out. He's not saying, "Ah, I'm going to root this thing out of my life and only be with this other lady." But what he's showing here is his major interest has to do with things like his retirement plan, his job security, his family life. If this other lady is only loosely connected to him, you have a chance, because then you might become the big bush. But the man is not inclined toward faithfulness, and the man is not inclined to cut you out either. So you have to make your choice. Do you want to be the side chick, or do you want to try for this? But if you try for him and win him, all you're going to win is a man who will have a side chick. In other words, you might get promoted if you break them up, but that doesn't mean he'll be always faithful, because he is a man who splits his attention. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And the third...
It sounds very accurate. It sounds very accurate.
Well, okay. Well, that's what we hope for. We do hope for accuracy. Thank you for letting me know I'm hitting some points here. The third card is... It's a card that tells me you may enjoy him, but I would, as a Taurus... about how old are you, ma'am?
I'm 25.
25. Oh, you got a long way to go, baby. I was just going to say, I mean, if you were 52, I'd say settle in and just take what you got. But at 25, uh-uh. So here's the story. The third card tells me that in the end, you probably will do better to take what you can and enjoy it and turn away and go someplace else for the perfect love, because this guy is not going to be the perfect love. So this third card is not a card of you're doing breakup work to break them up and then you get to have him. It's actually a card called The Liar and the Thief, and it's the Seven of Swords. It's not a happy card. It shows that, you know, I don't even know the man, and I'm not speaking ill of Virgos by any means. I'm just saying the man has not told you everything true. There is things going on in this guy's life. He'll take what he can. He probably does care quite a lot for you. He's a bit in awe of your intense, fantastic, wonderful sexuality. Congratulations on that. But he may steal away from you in a way that leaves you wishing he had stayed. And if you go for him, and if you do the breakup work, I'm here to tell you, it's not that the work would backfire. It's just that you'd end up with a piece of unsuitable timber to build your home life. You know, you can say, well, he's this great thing, but I'd enjoy him while you can and keep on looking for others. No need to, like, cut it off. I mean, he's treating you as a side chick. Every Taurus knows better to be a side chick than to go to bed alone, right? But keep looking. That's my advice to you. All right, I'm going to turn this over to Apollo Dark, and now he's going to give you a reading.
Well, I think that everything that I was going to say you pretty much covered, because I just directly asked him how he felt about the situation, and basically the answer that I got was he is interested in you. He really wants to have you. He doesn't want anything in his life to change, though. So he really just wants to keep this triangle of the situation intact as long as possible. He is also a dishonest man, so that he may lure you with false promises of, oh, I'm trying to figure out a way to break up with her. Don't worry, we're going to end up together. She's doing this and this and that, and I don't like that, and so I really want to find a way to end this relationship and be with you. And that kind of thing is probably, if he hasn't started doing that, he will start doing that, just to try and, like, keep you on the leash, kind of keep your hopes up so you don't disappear on him. The other thing to keep in mind is just reiterate something that Kat said, which is that if he does leave this other woman to be with you, he's not going to change his ways. He will be seeking that third part of the triangle that he really likes, because he most likely has an idea of that one woman is the house. One woman is who he is with, who he puts emotion to and time to and all of that, and is a bigger part of his life. But he also wants the woman that is not a part of his life and is just there to kind of take his mind off of his life, and give him this sense of freedom. So he has this kind of desire that is a perpetual desire, that is that he wants to feel freedom, but he doesn't want to be fully free of the situation. So, and what I'm getting at is that he needs the idea of freedom, but he doesn't really want to really embrace the idea of breaking away from his normal pattern to embark on some sort of new freedom. He wants to have that little tiny bit of freedom inside of what he's already used to. And so my advice is to, you know, just steer clear of this guy. He's, you know, if you're having fun with it, if you can be part of it in a way that's not going to end up hurting you emotionally, then I would say enjoy it for that. But as far as getting more emotionally involved or wrapped up into this guy, I would advise against that, because it's only going to, you know, lead to some sort of situation that ends up with you being hurt.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what we've got here then is two readers in agreement that doing the breakup work would not be your best choice, because you'll end up not enjoying what your outcome is. Let's turn this over to Conjure Man Ali. Now, normally at this point in our reading, he will give you some root work advice, prayer advice, spell advice, something like that to do. And but since we've sort of, shut this down in some ways, let's see what Ali has to say. How about it, Ali?
Yeah, thanks, Kat. I think those were phenomenal readings. And I think that you are in the right hands with the readers that you got. I'm going to give you first some blunt advice, and then I'm going to give you some root work that you can do. And it is root work that is fitting with what the reading says. I don't think that breakup work, I agree, is the route to take. You're a Taurus, though. You're stubborn, and you want what you want. And Tauruses, when they really feel someone, very hard for them to get over that person. It's often, the Tauruses often hold on to relationships that are dying or are dead for far longer than any other sign. I think Cancer is the only one that comes kind of close. But Tauruses are kind of notorious for that. So hopefully you'll listen to what we have to say. And the reason I say that is even the idea of sticking around because it's fun, I think is a little bit dangerous, because one, it may lead to you fooling yourselves, right? When like every day that he gives you a good sign, where he's a little bit more flirty, where he's a little nicer, you'll go, oh, well, maybe there is hope. Whereas the reading really doesn't show that. But more importantly, you're in your mid-20s, you're younger. You're headed very soon to your Saturn return. Saturn return is a period astrologically in your life where things are going to come into restriction. If you were in a dead-end relationship in the Saturn return, you will stay in that dead-end relationship for the years of the Saturn return. So this is why I don't think it's wise for you to stick around too long. If you're having your fun, great. So instead, what I want you to do is unstuck yourself and start looking for someone that is ideal for you. You can do root work that will bring you a person that is just like this guy, but with none of the baggage. I always tell that to clients. Everything you like about this guy, you can have that without any of the baggage or mess that he comes with. So what I want you to do is first take yourself a nice bath. A bath to help you get over this situation, or to help put some distance between you. And a good bath, what you can do is you can get rue, violet leaves, which helps to heal the heart, some rose petals. You can add just a little bit of lemon, squeeze a little bit of lemon into the tea that you brew with those, and wash yourself with that. And this is really good to kind of refresh the spirit, heal the heart, and also remove any chances of obsession or getting stuck. Next, I want you to make a mojo bag. You're an earth sign. You need something to carry with you. In this bag, I want you to put some Queen Elizabeth root, juniper berries, rose petals, violet leaves, and catnip. Put in there a piece of paper with all the qualities you're looking for an ideal lover. Close it up. Feed it some whiskey, some Follow Me Boy oil, and some sexual fluid that you've gathered while thinking about your ideal mother, and carry that with you everywhere you go, and you will get not only an abundance of attention from potential partners, but the right one that will come to you. It's easy work, it's simple work, and it's something that you will carry with you. Feed it once a week. Make sure that you put in a meaningful list in the mojo bag of qualities you're looking for, and it will find for you the perfect lover.
All right, I'm going to ask Ali. That was a really good mojo bag. Queen Elizabeth root, something catnip. What?
Ah, yes. It was Queen Elizabeth root, juniper berries.
Juniper.
Rose petals, violet leaves, and catnip.
Got it. Thank you. I type these out into the chat room. Okay, hon. That was a good bit of fantastic work. What he means by a mojo bag, now if you're unfamiliar with this, is you're going to gather those things together, put a little bit of Follow Me Boy oil, feed it with your sexual fluids and also with whiskey, carry that on you. Get it started by carrying it on you where it can get your sweat on you and get kind of tuned into you. and feed it once a week. You can feed it with whiskey or perfume, anything like that. That will help you draw a new lover.
I wasn't sure if it was mentioned, but make sure that this goes into a flannel bag.
A flannel bag, right. Flannel bag, very good. That is very nice to use. All right. Well, here's our music, and we're going to go away and come right back, and I believe it's going to be time for our free spell.
And now it's time for our free spell segment with Apollo Dark of ApolloDark.com in Forestville, California. Take it away, Apollo Dark.
All right. Well, I was going to do a mojo hand spell, but since we already had one described, I'm going to do something different. This is, like, I thought of it fitting into something we were discussing before. I forget what it was, but it's just like, maybe I should do this spell instead. But anyway, the spell I'm describing is a type of curse. It's a curse that, the one curse that I use to work with my clients. I'm hired to do this pretty often, which is my style of graveyard curse. So what it is that first you know your target. The target can be, usually it's best to keep it to one person. You know, if you're doing a group of people, it'll be slightly different, but I'm just going to describe the one target version. So you have targeting. That target is a male or female. When you have the male or female, you get, I would say, a candle, a black figural candle that's male or female. You get a picture of this person tied to the candle. You carve their name into the candle, and then you have that ready as an effigy of that person. You're also going to need to gather some supplies before you head to the graveyard, which is tin foil, sulfur, chili pepper, vinegar, and crossing oil and destruction oil. And so you take all this to the graveyard. When you're at the graveyard, before you really start putting things together, you need to find a suitable grave to bury this at. And so the way that that works is you walk through the graveyard, kind of trying to keep your mind clear and open to some sort of spiritual signal when you're walking past these graves, and until you feel one that gives you that this is the right one to do it at. When you go to this grave, you're also going to need to bring three dimes and some whiskey to the graveyard. So when you're at the grave, you have to pay the spirit. You ask the spirit, introduce yourself, you tell them what you're doing there. And then if you still get the good feeling of doing that work, then you proceed in paying that spirit, which is you dig three holes, one where the head would be and the two being either their shoulders or where their heart would be in their mid-chest. You dig three shallow holes, you place the dimes in them, pour some whiskey over those dimes and bury them, and you've now paid the spirit. So now you prepare the effigy, which is you lay out the tin foil with the shiny side facing up so that when you wrap it up, the shiny side is in. You place the effigy in there. You pour the vinegar. It doesn't have to be a lot of vinegar. You don't want just a huge puddle of it, but you pour some vinegar onto the effigy candle. And then you say a prayer that can be just the passion of the situation of what you want to have happen to this person and how much you want this person to feel your anger and, you know, just really voice it out. You say this as you're putting the ingredients on there, vinegar first always, and then you put the other ingredients onto the figure. And before you wrap it up, what I always do, because at least around here, there's always blackberries that grow at the graveyard, and so you want to find a blackberry bush to pick some leaves off of to also wrap up into the tin foil. So you place all the ingredients on there, the sulfur powder, chili powder, the oils, and then you wrap the blackberry brambles around or place it over it. You say a few words of your intention, and then you close the tin foil around it with the shiny side in, and so it becomes this package. And so now with the grave that you paid for, you bury this package, you know, in the way that it's not going to be too visible that there's something buried onto the grave. You want to, you know, deep enough so that things going to show if it rains, and you want to try and when you're covering it up to make the ground look as less disturbed as possible by putting leaves over it or just blending it in. And so the purpose of the spell is so that the ingredients, the main ingredients, all cause turmoil, suffering, anguish, destruction to their life and what they're trying to do. The blackberry leaves are there to stop them, hurt them, or cause them harm if they try to change or move away or fix the destruction in their life. And then the tinfoil with the shine side in is also to trap them further so that if they try to send anything out or reach anything out to magically as revenge or just in a way to try and help themselves, it just goes nowhere and is reflected back and doesn't do anything. And so this is a very, it's a very heavy curse. It's a very long lasting curse. If you're going to do this, you have to be really prepared that at the level of this curse that some really bad stuff's going to happen to this person. You have to be really okay with that.
Wow. What a spell. And just off the cuff at the top of the moment. Amazing, Apollo. That is a curse for the ages. And I hope that we get that written up and included in the new upcoming book that Miss Aida is doing. She's collecting curses from people, and I'd love to see that in her book on cursing, which will be coming out this next May. That is phenomenal work, Apollo. That's the dark part. There's the Apollo part, and then there's the dark part. Wow.
Yeah,
I'm really impressed with that. And I have to say, too, that if it were me doing that spell, I would not change or add anything to it other than one other thing. When you make a doll out of a candle, a figural candle like that, you can torment and torture that candle a little bit. And if I were in the mood, I might, depending on what the person had done, I might be sure to, say, for instance, carve the mouth out, put some alum in their mouth if I wanted them to be silent. Or if I didn't like a man's way of handling his wee-wee around town, I might just cut it off that candle and chew it up and spit it out on the grave. You know, little things like that. If it was a lady, I might, you know, plug her up, you know. You go as far as you want to, in other words.
Yeah, it's basically just make it as bad as you want it to be.
That's right. Make it as bad as you want it to be, but don't be eating that red hot pepper. You'll get an effect of it. Well, guys, that was something. Thank you very much, Apollo Dar. All right, I'm going to turn this over to Papa Newt. He's going to give us our closing announcements. Then after that, we'll all come back and give our good goodbyes. Papa Newt?
Thanks. Thank you, Ms. Dad, and Countryman Ali, and thank you, Apollo Dark of ApolloDark.com and Forestville, California, for being our guest this week. We invite you to tune in next week when we'll have another special guest from the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers. We'll be Mama E of ConjureDoctor.com in Los Angeles, California, discussing pumpkin spells. Once again, we come to an end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. You can find Ms. Cat via the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and Conjurman Ali at conjurmanali.com in Mission Viejo, California. Yeah, you can. I'm your announcer, Papa Newt, joining you from papanewt.com in Columbus, Nebraska. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available in archive via luckymojo.com/radioshow.html. For all of us at Lucky Mojo, I'd like to say thank you for being here and invite you to tune in once again next week at the same time when you'll hear the familiar strains of the Memphis Jug Band playing the Jug Band Waltz. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you so much, Papa Newt. Thank you, Countryman Ali. And thank you, Apollo Dark.
Thanks for having me. Bye, everyone.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you come back soon. Teach us some more of your great, fantastic forms of work. And Ali, thank you so much for introducing me to the ventriloquist spirit of Arabic name catching.
Always a pleasure.
What was the name of that thing again?
Nomgirak.
Nomgirak. Okay.
Yes.
Wow. That was great.
What'd you say, a gnome in Iraq? A gnome in Iraq?
No, it's Girak. All right. Good night, all.
Bye, everyone.